Hello, this is comedian, author and podcaster Michael Legg, and you're listening to the Peggy Mounts Calamity Hour. FYI, there's a lot of drinking and swearing in this. Well, they tell me they're swearing. I don't listen to it. I mean, obviously I don't listen to it. They've paid me to say this, sort of. It's more like bribery, it doesn't really matter. Anyway, enjoy the show. Checking closed. Try to sound enthusiastic. Oh.
This is absolutely running to the toilet music.
Yes, yes.
With importance and urgency. This is great.
Yeah. I want the 12-inch.
Is it just me that finds him to be an amalgamation of Dickie Davies and Buster Crabbe?
I'm definitely seeing Dickie Davies. Yeah, that wonderful streak of piss through his hair.
I think today calls for the Western bow tie. Yes, in pink. In bastard pink. And if any of those squares of the United World Organization have got a problem with that, they can fucking swivel.
Exit! Stage left!
All right. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Peggy Mount Calamity Hour. I'm Dr. Velvet.
I'm Blackout.
And we're here because despite searching for hours in the Argos catalogue, we simply cannot find an action figure of David Doyle with electric golf cart accessory from the Charlie's Angels range. And before we defer to the drinks, Mr. Blackout, do my eyes deceive me or do we have a guest in our midst? Yes, we do indeed. It's the eminent educator of fictional science and the horror. We have with us Professor Lionel Ziggy Zuko.
Hello.
Hello to you.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for dialing in live from wherever you are. I'm sure it's somewhere science fiction-y and mysterious. Anyway, Blackout's got a question.
Well, yes, hello to you all. Hello to you, Professor. Thank you for plunging into our casual cultural critique of vintage television, where Britain's best-loved battle axe is never far from our minds, because here, all dives will lead to the mountain. If you want to head over to peggymanpod.com, info for the episode we're discussing is in the show notes. You can find us on the socials, get in touch to say hello, or ask us why we haven't covered Ulysses 31 yet. Before we crank up the propellers, though, gentlemen, I've got to ask, what are we drinking?
Well, there's a nautical theme to this episode, which I'm choosing to ignore completely by drinking the Dead Man's Fingers, licorice and blackcurrant rum.
Good Lord.
I'll tell you now, it's like petrol. It's kicking me arse. It is like petrol, this. I've had three, what would we call them, trebles, and it actually hurts. Tomorrow's going to be fun.
That's anyway, not a treble, yeah. That's half a pint.
Right. Never mind. Professor, what are you drinking?
Well, I've also dipped my toe into the briny, and I've gone for something nautical as well. So I've released the Kraken, black spice rum, roast coffee flavour.
There we go.
Oh, yes, it keeps me asleep and awake all at the same time.
It's going to get messy in here.
Isn't it? I didn't even know they did a coffee flavour of that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's like mellow birds for an alcoholic.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, and we all like mellow birds.
Yeah, after a while, do you remember on the commercial where they used to draw the face in the top of the Mellow Bird's coffee?
Yes.
Do you get that expression on your face if you've drank enough of this? That would be nice.
I was kicked out of a Tesco's for doing that on all the jars.
I thought it was you, and you weren't even using your finger.
No siree.
Blackout, what are you drinking?
Aptly enough, I've got a bottle of Shark Bay, which is made by Shepherd Neame under the Hathaway pseudonym.
Shark Bay.
Yeah, it's a 4.3% amber ale. Pretty ordinary, pretty passable.
A bit of a bite to it, is it?
No.
No.
It's 4.3% alcohol. There's almost no bite to it. It's basically shandy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. With that, let us cast off in the direction of shameless rebranding and psychedelic jazz so that we can all learn about saving the planet.
The Undersea Adventures of Captain Nemo was a 1975 action cartoon series created and co-written by Al Guest and Gene Matheson and produced by Rainbow Animation in Canada. Designed as an anthology for inclusion during Captain Kangaroo, the story's only clocking at 5 minutes, but the one season which was made did consist of 78 episodes. Each outing follows Mark Nemo and his young assistants Robbie and Christine as they have quasi-educational adventures aboard their nuclear-powered submarine, the Nautilus, usually involving sharks. However, we have watched the very first episode, Rescue of a Killer, which aired in the UK on ITV on the 26th of June 1978 at 10:20 in the morning. There's absolute hell on as reports of killer whales going utterly berserk reaches our eponymous hero, so obviously Mark decides to take two young children with him to investigate.
So, as always, gentlemen, first question is, did we watch or do we have a memory of this little treasure at all?
I have no clue. I must have slept through all 78 episodes of this because I just don't recall it at all.
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen this as well.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
I do remember this, you see.
I'm vaguely aware of it, but I can tell you for a fact I didn't used to watch it. I don't know if it's because the 5 minute runtime just would not have held my attention. It's, you know.
I did some digging on this and I was looking at the broadcast times.
Right.
And I know it was, I know Thames used to show it weeks in succession. That's fine. But I'm not sure if Tyne Tees did the same. And I think it was used as a bit of a filler.
Right.
So when this cropped up on various media sharing sites, I thought, oh, yes, I remember that. I bought the DVD. I've got it here on my shelf. And it really took me back. And the first thing that hit me was that theme tune. That absolute amazing theme tune.
It is glorious.
It is remarkable. It's Honor Majesty's Secret Service for kids.
Isn't it? It's exactly that.
Yep. It took me somewhere special until it finished, the music that is, but superb.
It certainly implies action, which you're not going to get in the following 4.5 minutes.
That's right. well spotted, because 30 seconds of this episode is theme tune.
Yeah.
out of a 5 minute episode.
Yeah, yeah, that's a lot, but okay.
Yeah. I always sort of assess theme music in a unique way, and it can be said that the Undersea Adventures of Captain Nemo, the theme tune to it, is no exception. This is absolutely running to the toilet music.
Yes, yes.
With importance and urgency. This is great.
Yeah. I want the 12-inch. I absolutely want the 12-inch of this. I know that would fill the episode, but the 12-inch of this would be something special.
Oh,
because
yeah,
it does all the heavy lifting for the visuals. It really does. I mean, okay, you've got exploding volcanoes, but then you've got the enduring image of a clam coming all over a kid's face. It's something to behold.
I like that they've sort of rebooted this classic literary character and called him Mark. You don't really get many story protagonists called Mark, do you? There's plenty of actors, but no one's really writing in characters with that name.
Yeah, it so smacks of the 70s, doesn't it? It takes all that kind of sexiness out of it. It's straight down the line.
This is the thing. I don't know why it feels so weird, because it's, in terms of, like, male protagonist, it's single syllable, it's Latin in origin, it appears in Celtic, Roman, biblical texts, it is up there with the classics, but because there's no real precedent for this, whenever one of the characters goes, oh, look, here comes Mark, it sounds like they might be talking about the plumber or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. The only other Mark I know as an effective protagonist, Battle of the Planets.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
So they use, but that was in the English translation.
Yes.
In its original form, he's called Ken. So
fair. Ken of the Planets. I remember that.
Ken of the Planets. While we're on the subject of Captain Mark Nemo, is it just me that finds him to be an amalgamation of Dickie Davies and Buster Crabbe?
I'm definitely seeing Dickie Davis. Yeah, that wonderful streak of piss through his hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Dickie Crab, along with his assistants, Christine and Robbie, in a nuclear-powered submarine. I mean, they failed at the first hurdle there in our teachings about the environment. But, that Malin streak in the hair from years of his nicotine-stained fingers brushing his quiff into place.
And can you imagine him smoking in that thing?
I think he loves a tab. Absolutely.
Is it explained in any of the future episodes how, again, Jules Verne's character, Captain Nemo, was the son of an Indian Raja, Whereas the version we get here is not only Caucasian, he's fucking borderline Aryan.
Yes. Yes. With a voice so deep, only the fish at the bottom of the ocean can hear him.
I mean, to be fair, if they were going to keep sort of the Asian thing, I suppose they couldn't risk letting Len Carson loose on that accent.
Well, it's funny you talk about him being Aryan, because I'm sure that when Dr. McPherson or Dr. Scottish McScotty introduces him, I'm sure he says, "Good morning, Nazis." So there's definitely something sinister going on there.
I'm glad you bring this up.
I tuned into a spin-off of Mind Your Language.
Yeah.
to the plot, gentlemen. We open on the Nautilus with the three of them sort of basically on the bridge, whatever the submarine equivalent of a bridge is. Mark leans around to one of the kids. He's like, "Here, earn your keep and press that button," so that they can get given an assignment for the day. This is like, you know, this is 8 o'clock Monday morning. This show has invented the Zoom call in 1975. I've got to respect that.
Absolutely. What else are you going to have on board a nuclear-powered submarine?
Yeah, you know,
in 1978, you know,
especially given that this version of Zoom also includes audio filters, which yes makes people's accents comedically unbelievable.
Yes.
And as you've so rightly pointed out, this is the animated version of Mind Your Language.
It's appalling. This absolutely offensive.
Dr. McPherson introduces himself of the United World Organization. That's a bit of a generic name, isn't it? Fine. Ocean Studies. And yeah, it's possibly meant to be Scottish, I think.
Yeah.
Is that it? I like that he's woken up and he's gone, "I think today calls for the Western bow tie." Yes, in pink. In bastard pink. And if any of those squares of the United World Organization have got a problem with that, they can fucking swivel.
He reminded me of Dr. Snuggles meets Colonel Sanders as well.
Yes.
Via Scotty. Yeah. All of those characters are rather creepy.
Aren't they?
So he's like the best of the greatest hits of creepy characters.
One of them is we touched on Battle of the Planets just a couple of minutes ago. One of them is voiced by the guy that narrates the title sequence from Battle of the Planets, and I couldn't find his name, but there we are. It's his voice. I know this. Yeah.
He was much in demand then.
Clearly. Unfortunately, this is the one standout part of the entire episode for me, for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. We move on to Dr. Oko. She works in marine biology. She does 10 words in the script, in a sort of nondescript Asian. That's never gone into again.
Yeah, and of those 10 words, two of them are mushy, mushy.
You know.
That's right, yeah.
We have Dr. Winters on communications. I'll come back to him in a second. And is it Dr. Anthony in marine chemistry?
I think so, yes.
Right. What I want to know is, where are the undersea adventures of Dr. Winters? That man is fucking mint.
Yeah.
Squid would mess with him. He's solid. So after spending 25% of the runtime with having four characters introduce themselves in exactly the same way as you wouldn't at the start of every meeting, Dr. McPherson's like, "There's whales going, Acker, investigate that. Meeting over, everybody. Okay, thanks, bye."
Yes.
This literally could have been an email.
And I question their credentials. You know, they're supposedly marine biologists and experts, but a pack of whales? Does Nemo buy a pod of cigarettes? Questionable science.
McPherson's like, "Oh, we'll send you the coordinates." Then it turns out that the Nautilus is only half a mile away from all the trouble to begin with.
Yeah, funny that.
Do the creators of this show know how big the ocean is? Or do they think that the Nautilus has got a fucking hyperdrive?
I wouldn't be surprised if we found out it's Nemo that's been laying the pipe. Laying the cable, rather. Laying the pipe's a completely different thing, and we shouldn't go there.
Laying a cable's not much better.
And we've all laid the cable from time to time.
So we do find out, indeed, yes, that a killer whale is caught in a cable.
Well, but no, before we get to that, turns out they've got Wikipedia on the submarine in 1975 as well.
Oh, are you talking about the computer library, which is clearly a converted fruit machine?
It's superb.
It's basically, they've got their own version of Arse reading out from Wikipedia. That's what that is. It's excellent.
That's, yeah.
And do you know who stole that? Star Trek IV. And what was Star Trek IV about? So, I think this is an incredibly influential episode.
Oh, yeah. You've touched on something there.
I think so. I think we may mock it, but I think it laid the cable far and wide.
But in Star Trek IV, my memory's a little bit hazy on this. Is there a bit where the characters are talking about, sort of having a conversation about the behaviour of marine life while a full fucking orchestra plays chasing music in the background?
Yes, I think you're right.
The soundtrack to this is absolutely nuts.
It is nuts. That's the word. But beautiful. I want it, and I've looked, and can I find it? No. I will have this. I will have this.
I think if we sent an email to Mark Ayres, he'd probably work his magic.
Of course he would, yeah. He'd do that for us, wouldn't he? Yeah.
I think so. In fact, we should really get an album of versions of this, shouldn't we, really? I think I'd like to hear the Peter Howell Astronauts-esque version of this theme.
Yes.
I'm excited myself.
I'd like to hear the Jeff Love version of this.
It made me think of Jeff Love does James Bond. And I'm surprised it's not on one of his compilations.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, so the crew on board the ship on the Nautilus. Christine, mind, she'd get on my nerves.
Yes. Oh,
those kids.
Oh, there's a certain smugness to her. No, don't like her at all.
They're the most obnoxious pair, I think.
I'm not entirely sure what the setup is whereby Mark is just allowed to be on a submarine with two children.
Yes.
What is their relationship?
I don't know. It's not touched on here. I don't know if this comes in, if they're dropping a bit of exposition in sort of like future episodes. Don't know.
It's quite possible, but until then, they're known as his assistants. I mean, what?
Yeah. Bearing in mind there's trouble, and he's like, yep, let's go and look at that. I think there are safeguarding issues here.
Of course there are.
Well, I mean, look at their faces. I mean, the lifeless eyes, the black eyes.
Yeah.
They're like doll's eyes. They're terrified. And if they're not terrified, they're angry. They have this kind of perpetual anger on their faces. But who wouldn't be?
No matter what the emotion is, they're always on 10.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's going to be fucking exhausting in that submarine.
Yeah, I would be angry if I was cooped up with Dr. Mark Nemo. Captain Mark Nemo, smelling of tabs from morning till night.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Because I bet there is a haze in that submarine and it just smells of tobacco the entire time. Yeah.
So do we find out what's been going on?
The whale's caught in the wire and it's furious, absolutely stotting. And it's shouted and created all kinds of hell on and raised the place.
This is it.
It's the Karen of the whale species, this.
Yep, it's basically a bone-idle whale was trapped under a communications cable and has been shouting at the others, who were too inept to help it. Mark uses the grabber arm from the sub to lift the cable up. He doesn't. He gives one of the kids that fucking job as well.
And he has a go at them. Don't scratch the skin. Don't scratch the skin. Just do your fucking self.
Yeah, Robbie's like, how about you do it your fucking self?
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the episode. That took 5 minutes. They can basically knock off at 25 past nine in the morning, phone back up to Dr. McPherson, like, right, done. What now?
What I couldn't get over was we're told that killer whales are very hard to catch, and this daft one got caught in a cable.
Yes,
so they're clearly very, very easy to catch.
I do like how when Ars is reading out all the text there, it gives sort of a bit of the background of killer whales and then goes, there have been no documented cases of killer whales attacking humans. And you're like, they got that name by accident, did they? Right.
Yeah, that's right, because they say that there's no evidence they've ever harmed a man. So she must be shitting herself.
Yes. And you're right, that is the episode.
Hang on, apart from anything else, Dr. Winters earlier introduced himself as being in charge of communications. This whale was trapped under a comms cable. He should be the one sorting all this out. I will ask you again, where are the undersea adventures of Dr. Winters?
So this claims to be an educational cartoon.
Ooh.
Is it? What have we learned?
That killer whales go round in packs.
Uh-huh. Packs, yes, packs.
We've learned that whoever's in charge of the cable ship should be paying more attention to what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. I've learned three things. Whales don't like wires.
Uh-huh.
Accents may initially seem easy to emulate. They're not. And number three, never underpay your animators.
They've overpaid the orchestra, it's fine.
That's where all this has gone, isn't it?
That's where the budget
money's
went.
Gone. Yeah.
It's a Derek Griffiths situation, it's only one guy.
It's Poundland Filmation, isn't it? It is Poundland Filmation.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Yeah, because Filmation skimped anyway. This is ridiculous, this.
Yeah. And I suspect we see a lot of this footage in episodes 2 through to 79 as well.
Yeah.
I imagine the killer whales feature quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Blackout, you mentioned there was a few episodes around whales and sharks and things, didn't you? Yeah.
Every other week it's sharks.
Right.
Did you say you've got the DVD set of this, like the entire one?
So, not the entire. So they broke it down into volumes, and I think... This one, there's about 8 episodes on it or something.
Because I've looked online, I can't seem to find the final episode where the Nautilus stumbles across the sunken non-Euclidean majesty of Rillier, and the three of them wake Cthulhu from his dark slumber and end up going mad while trapped on the seabed. I think that might be exclusive to DVD.
I will sell my tits to get the soundtrack of that.
Oh, no, it's just the same soundtrack on every single episode.
Oh, so it is, right?
Yes, yes. I think they brought in the electric guitar for that, but other than that, exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't get too much of a good thing, so...
Yeah, well, that's very true. Good Lord, that being said, Mr. Blackout, how many pegs will you place on the robust nipples of Captain Mark Nemo?
The undersea adventures of Captain Nemo are basically fine, but at 5 minutes, I have absolutely no idea what this is for. Certainly not storytelling. 6 out of 9.
Professor Zuko, how many pegs will you carefully place on a whale's arse?
Well, I clearly can't get over the coming clam or the pack of killer whales. I'm only going to give this 4 pegs.
4 pegs. All right, OK.
Come on then, Dr. Velvet. Lay it on us.
Nice idea. But for this to have any lasting effect on a young mind, I'd argue this should be longer, even if that was only 5-10 minutes. As far as the educational slant on this goes, it's effectively bullet points with pictures. Besides, I wanted a tour around the Nautilus. I at least wanted to see the bar or something. I wanted to explore it. Anyway, 6 pegs.
Fair play.
I want to see the smoking room.
Well, can you imagine?
The entire Nautilus is the smoking room.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's you walk into the bar, you can't see the ceiling.
Yeah, a floating ashtray.
Yeah.
Brilliant. It smells of Benson and Hedges, I think. It's not Marlborough.
Oh, that's what they should have called the kids.
Yes.
Benson and Hedges.
Yeah. Nice. So that being said, Blackout, how many forests will burn as to provide a power source for the Nautilus to take you up to the mountain?
Well, it's transatlantic animation, so buckle yourself in. This show features the vocal talent of Billy Mae Richards, who appeared in an episode of Maniac Mansion alongside David Cronenberg, who directed 1988's Dead Ringers, which starred Jeremy Irons, who rocked up in Brideshead Revisited with Claire Bloom, who provided voice work for 1991's The Princess and the Goblin, as did Peggy Mount.
They still haven't printed my problem.
Very good. Very good indeed. Yes, yes, yes.
What about yourself, good doctor?
I could do this in just as many. This show features the vocal talent of Billy Mae Richards, who performed in 1979's Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July, along with Shelley Winters, who starred, of course, in the first version of Pete's Dragon. Next to Jim Dale, who turned up in 1962's The Iron Maiden in the company of Joan Sims, who was in Dry Rot with
And Sissy's out buying me an elephant.
Lovely, lovely. And over to you, Professor. How many Malin streaks will it take you to cosplay Dicky Crab up the mountain?
Well, I've got your leg beat. This show features the vocal talents of Billy Mae Richards, who lent her tones to the 1985 Care Bears movie in the company of Mickey Rooney, who starred in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, next to Terry Thomas, who was in 1957's The Naked Truth, with Peggy Mount.
She will be shivering, then I pinned it to her jumper.
Outstanding work.
Outstanding, yes. Right, I'm just off to launch a thorough investigation into the real reason behind Banana Man's name, while simultaneously crocheting a new pair of slippers for Skeleton from Super Ted. In the meantime, Blackout's got your socials.
Yes, thank you once again for being with us. If you'd like to get in touch, you can email peggymanpod@gmail.com or we're peggymanpod on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. 5-star ratings are always welcome on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to us. Don't forget to go to peggymanpod.com, check out the show notes for this and for all of our other episodes.
It's as simple as that. It really, really is. Thanks once again to Professor Zuko. Charmed to have you here, sir.
Thank you. I've loved every moment.
Come back. Come back soon.
Yes, you must return. You must return. For the moment, that's it from us. We'll be back sometime soon with more of the same except different. Until then, keep mounting.
The Peggy Man Calamity Hour is a free podcast from iHeartMedia which holds production copyright. Opinions and recollections expressed are not to be taken as fact. The title and credit music is by Dr. Velvet. Audio segments from television programs are presented for review and informational purposes only under fair use, and no ownership of these is claimed or implied by this show. For more information, visit peggymanpod.com.